For Mike and Peggy Rogers, a sailor and his lady, and all the men and women of the U.S. Armed Forces, because the noblest of ideas have always been protected by warriors. Why, you may take the most gallant sailor, the most intrepid airman, or the most audacious soldier, put them at a table together. What do you get? The sum of their fears. Winston Churchill. The two contenders met with all their troops on the field of Camlin to negotiate. Both sides were fully armed and desperately suspicious that the other side was going to try some ruse or stratagem. The negotiations were going along smoothly until one of the knights was stung by an asp and drew his sword to kill the reptile. The others saw the sword being drawn and immediately fell upon each other. A tremendous slaughter ensued. The chronicle is quite specific about the point that the slaughter was excessive chiefly because the battle took place without preparations and premeditation. Herman Kahn, On Thermonuclear War. Prologue, Broken Arrow. Like the Wolf on the Fold. In recounting the Syrian attack on the Israeli-held Golan Heights at 1400 local time on Saturday, the 6th of October, 1973, most commentators automatically recalled Lord Byron's famous line. There is also little doubt that that is precisely what the more literarily inclined Syrian commanders had in mind when they placed the final touches on the operations plans that would hurl more tanks and guns at the Israelis than any of Hitler's vaunted panzer generals had ever dreamed of having. However, the sheep found by the Syrian army that grim October day were more like big horned rams in autumn rut than the more docile kind found in pastoral verse. Outnumbered by roughly 9-1, the two Israeli brigades on the Golan were crack units. The 7th Brigade held the northern Golan and scarcely budged, its defensive network a delicate balance of rigidity and flexibility. Individual strong points held stubbornly, channeling the Syrian penetrations into rocky defiles where they could be pinched off and smashed by roving bands of Israeli armor which lay in wait behind the purple line. By the time reinforcements began arriving on the second day, the situation was still in hand, but barely. By the end of the fourth day, the Syrian tank army that had fallen upon the 7th lay a smoking ruin before it. The Barak, Thunderbolt Brigade held the southern heights and was less fortunate. Here the terrain was less well suited to the defense, and here also the Syrians appear to have been more ably led. Within hours, the Barak had been broken into several fragments. Though each piece would later prove to be as dangerous as a nest of vipers, the Syrian spearheads were quick to exploit the gaps and race toward their strategic objective, the Sea of Galilee. The situation that developed over the next 36 hours would prove to be the gravest test of Israeli arms since 1948. Reinforcements began arriving on the second day. These had to be thrown into the battle area piecemeal, plugging holes, blocking roads, even rallying units that had broken under the desperate strain of combat and, for the first time in Israeli history, fled the field before the advancing Arabs. Only on the third day were the Israelis able to assemble their armored fist, first enveloping, then smashing the three deep Syrian penetrations. The changeover to offensive operations followed without pause. The Syrians were hurled back toward their own capital by a wrathful counterattack and surrendered a field littered with burned-out tanks and shattered men. At the end of this day, the troopers of the Barak and the 7th heard over their unit radio nets a message from Israeli Defense Forces High Command: "You have saved the people of Israel." And so they had. Yet outside Israel, except for schools in which men learn the profession of arms, this epic battle is strangely unremembered. As in the Six-Day War of 1967, the more freewheeling operations in the Sinai were the ones that attracted the excitement and admiration of the world. Bridging the Suez, the Battle of the Chinese Farm, the encirclement of the Egyptian Third Army. This despite the fearful implications of the Golan fighting, which was far closer to home. Still, the survivors of those two brigades knew what they had done, and their officers could revel in the knowledge that among professional soldiers who know the measure of skill and courage that such a stand entails, their battle for the heights would be remembered.